let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you, so let's go kick some art. Kia ora and welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen, proudly sponsored this month by our friends at the Dolphin Theatre. Head to dolphintheatre.org.nz to see their great lineup of shows coming up. Kick Arts is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcasts, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz, and check us out on Spotify. Tonight we're joined in studio by author and illustrator for the latest children's book, Magic Jack, the truish story of the Easter Bunny. We catch up with singer-songwriter Jenny Smith on her latest track, and we chat to the team behind the show, My Name is Rachel Corrie. Now, to kick off the show today, it was announced this week that the international cast of Jesus Christ Superstar is heading our way in October this year, so let's kick it off with the title song from the original soundtrack. Superstar coming to the Civic. The Civic's having a busy year this year, Emma.
It's actually crazy how many international shows.
It's fantastic.
Because we've, of course, got Rocky Horror at the moment.
Yeah, just opened.
Then Heathers is probably the next one before Jesus Christ Superstar. And, of course, Andrew Liet.
and Juliet. And did I hear Book of Mormon's kicking the year off next year here? Did I hear that correctly?
Oh.
I think I heard that the other day.
That's exciting. Because remember Book of Mormon were meant to be here and then it got cancelled because of COVID.
Twice, I think, it cancelled. From vague memory, was that come from away? Cancelled twice. Something cancelled twice over there.
Come from away.
Yeah. You and I had a big night last night. We were at the Northern Area Performance Theatre Awards, otherwise known as the
Nectars.
What a great night of the northern part of New Zealand theatre celebrating the wonderful work they've done.
Yeah. So it was celebrating the 2025 show season, from the Bombays up to Kirikiri. So no, it was a fantastic night. A great turnout.
Yeah.
It was lovely seeing everyone all dressed up.
It was a screamy night. There was lots of people really into
it
last night, which was cool.
Every single time someone's name was called out, there was a scream.
Yeah, and so cool to see Kirikiri come all the way down and take away a really big prize towards the end of the night. So well done to everyone involved and to everyone involved in the Nectars. Anything like that takes a lot of organisation. So it was a good night. You and I also popped along this week to check in on the last 5 years, who we interviewed a week or so ago. Great to see someone producing, you know, young people producing theatre themselves. Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, and such a fantastic band, on stage band, you know, and the sound was so full considering there was actually only 5 instruments sitting there.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was such a good sound. And of course,
we got a bit of a treat because we had a combined cast that night for whatever reason. There was somebody away and
someone was away and someone was sick. So yeah, Rose was away. So we had Grace and Logan and it was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, well done, Tink. Well done. It sort of feels like the theatre world's just kicking off for the year. If you look at our schedule, suddenly there's lots of shows coming up. So theatre is alive and well, especially up here in Auckland. But we're not talking theatre first up. We're catching up with the theatre group a little later today. First of all, it's books and music. And a big welcome back to the show, Kirsty. Great to have you here.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's lovely to have you. Last time you were here with your fabulous friend, Nikki, talking about some books. This time you have brought your illustrator along. Tanya, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you very much for having me.
Great to have you both here. And tell us, Magic Jack. This feels like a very special book. I can't believe we're talking Easter already. That scares me that it's already March, but
I know, sorry.
Easter's early this year. It's beginning of April. What is Magic Jack all about?
So Magic Jack came about because when you're not a religious family at Easter, my children always were very confused about why we had an Easter bunny delivering chocolate eggs, and it didn't really make a lot of sense. So this book was my explanation of how the chocolate eggs come about and why they are delivered by the rabbit.
Okay. Was Easter bunny big in your house?
Yes. I mean, well, because, it was the person that brought the treats.
Yeah, we loved all the Easter hunts. We used to be crazy about it. And then months later, you'd sort of sit on the couch and go, what am I sitting on? And it's one of those eggs that never got found. So are you allowed to give us away any spoilers about Magic Jack? I mean, kids should be tucked up in bed now. We should be safe.
Well, I would just say that if you believe that a rabbit lays eggs, you're probably wrong. but this is only the truish story, so anything is possible, I guess. This is my true story, though, of the bunny and why he has chickens laying chocolate eggs.
And why they only come once a year as well, because most animals would lay eggs more than once.
Constipated chicken.
I mean, if there's not that many chickens, they have to lay a lot of chickens over the year, don't they, to get enough to get around that world delivering all those eggs to all those children.
And look, the standout is the illustrations, just beautiful. How did you first meet Tanya?
So Tanya's daughter is dating my son, and they have been together for about 6 years, so we're practically family.
That's nice.
And because she's an artist, I thought, who better than to illustrate this for me?
Brilliant. And look, we've had lots of conversations, Emma and I, with authors lately about illustrations and, you know, the world of AI and all of that these days. So we can tell our listeners Tanya's real. She's here in the studio. It's not a hologram.
Hello.
How long does it take to create a children's book like this? Because the illustrations are outstanding.
This one has been a labour of love. I took over a 3-year period to finish the actual illustrations. They are acrylic on canvas, so it's a bit of a, layer upon layer technique.
Wow.
And it's the first book that I've illustrated, so there was a lot of experimentation and learnings along the way.
Did you get lots of chocolate eggs delivered through the process? Like, has the Easter Bunny been kind to you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
The cream eggs are my favourite.
Ah, good, good, good. So when you say it's acrylic on canvas, then do you, is it scan it? Do you take photos? How do you then get it into this digital form?
So I have a wonderful designer friend, Steve Caskell Hara, who takes them and scans the work. And he did a wonderful job of formatting it as well to get it to printing stage.
Nice. Emma's having a good flick through the book.
I know, I'm having a read. I'm finding out about these fantastic characters in here too. It's kind of a bit like SpongeBob.
Ooh.
There's a snail.
This is not your first venture into children's books?
No, Nikki and I, my sister, that we normally write the romantic comedies, but we have done two other children's books as well, just as a little, it's a bit of fun in between the serious books, well, the adult books.
Okay.
But
she let you write this one on your own?
She let me write this one on my own. But the thing is that children's books are a lot harder for us to produce because Nikki and I cannot draw or paint.
Yeah.
We're absolutely hopeless. So we have to get somebody else to do the work for us. And it's expensive to hire an illustrator. It's great if you know somebody
who'll
just come on board with you and take half the profits, hopefully, if we sell them.
That is the hardest thing. And, Emma's shocked at the end. She's got to the end and she's shocked.
There's a little surprise at the end of the book.
Oh, you're not going to share?
No.
Okay, cool. Now I want the book. How hard is it? You talk about it being difficult, like getting into the children's market in New Zealand or Australasia. What do you have to do to try and really get this book out?
Really, it's hard if you publish yourself. So if you're an independent publisher, it's always hard to get into bookstores. But kids' books tend to sell well at market, so we've been doing that. And we've been going to schools and kindies and reading the book to kids and hopefully getting some interest in that. And we're also, this year, going to the Easter show.
Cool.
So we will be selling the book there, which is fantastic.
And what a fabulous present for Easter, especially if you've got a kid that's perhaps not into the chocolate or can't have too much chocolate. I mean, you could give a small amount of chocolate with this, but how nice to give a book.
Yeah, and I think for grandparents, they love that traditionalness of the book. It's got those real, they're not digital art, they're little kind of keepsakes to give to grandchildren rather than chocolate.
And I love a book that you can pass down. You know, and that the illustrations make that, you know, something that you've got really that you can treasure and then pass to the next generation.
Now, I'm really distracted.
Yeah. Emma's just lost in the book.
I'm so distracted because of this little moment at the end of the book. And I can't find it on this page, which is really frustrating the heck out of me.
You can reveal that if you like.
So you turn to the very last page and it says, after it tells you to not forget to brush your teeth, which is extremely important when you're eating Easter eggs, it says, did you find the hidden jandal in each of the illustrations?
Ooh.
And I did straight away find the carrot wearing a jandal, and I did find the little green jandal there. But I'm looking at this page now and going, where is Wally? Where is that jandal? Where is it?
Some of them are very hard to find.
Okay, that'll be my challenge in the music break. We'll see if I can find it in the music break. But what a cool idea.
They are such cool, and I love the fact that you've brought in lots of different, like, real characters. Like, to me, the rabbit's a real character. But then you've brought in some fictional fantasy with having the tiny elves and everything as well. That's so cool. And I love that the eggs are wrapped up in coloured leaves, not tinfoil. So they're biodegradable.
Brilliant.
And we're all about sustainability.
So we have Easter in autumn in New Zealand.
Yeah.
So we sort of looked at the concept of leaves falling and, you know, they're being collected by the elves.
I love that. That is just so cute.
This sounds like a good segue for your next book, which will be a Christmas-themed one, I feel.
It will, and there will probably have to be hidden elf shoes in that one, I think.
Have you started illustrating that already? Because if it's 3 years, you know, Christmas is coming.
I was working part-time when I was illustrating that book, and I think I've come a long way since doing that. I've actually done some courses during that period of time, so this is going to be faster. However, we've got all our, we're sort of focusing on
Magic Jack at the moment, just to get it out there.
Yeah, so. Get it out. So tell us a little bit about your journey as an illustrator. When did it all kick off for you? How much have you had, how long have you loved art?
I have absolutely been obsessed with art since COVID. So it was one of the good things that came out of COVID for me was that I discovered this passion. I did a bit of a taster course prior to that and sort of got introduced to a number of different mediums, and I just fell in love with acrylic and canvas. So, I had a number of people say to me, you know, you don't want to use any granulated medium when you're illustrating a children's book. But, you know, when you love something so much, I just had to go with that because that's where my passion lies. And I think that's a really important thing when you're doing art. You know, it needs to come from the heart. Otherwise, it doesn't mean much to you. And, you know, that passion just will continue on. And it is now through the marketing and everything because we're very... we're passionate about our book, so...
But I think the look of it, it makes the book something different. It's not like you're turning a page and it's a two-dimensional cartoon-looking kids thing. And to me, it actually makes it much more almost sophisticated because the illustrations are so beautifully detailed. You know, I'm just looking at the elf's little hats at the moment and looking at all the little coloured petals. I mean, it's just absolutely gorgeous. And the ear of corn, like you can see all the tiny little bits of corn. I just love it.
She's very talented.
So if it's not a book you're illustrating, what other sort of platforms or where has your art been used for?
I have been doing a lot of pet portraits. So also love pastels and pastel pencils. I've been doing a few commissions. So I take on a few a year just to keep me... I don't want to say entertained, but I want to love what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I don't want it to be a chore, so I don't take on too many commissions, but I take on ones that sing to me.
So are they sending you photos of their pets? Is that what you're working off? Or do you have one of those very awkward situations where the dog has to come in and sit for hours and not move? Is it like humans? Do they sit still?
So yes, I do go off reference photos. It can be a bit challenging when pets are deceased and we don't have great photos, but what we do is I get as many photos as I can get of the animal, and then I'll also request videos if they have them, just so that I can get a feel for the character of the animal.
Cool.
So it just adds an extra depth to it.
Any humans in any of these photos, or you stick to animals?
I have done some... I've done a child, I've done a baby, which was incredibly challenging and very scary. Prefer animals. Mm. I'm attracted to doing a lot of sort of mystical pieces as well. It's more for fun. Yeah.
Where do you sit in this world of AI now and technology sort of taking so much of this? You know, do you see it as important to really keep marketing the fact that people are still doing this from scratch and it's so important?
Absolutely. There is just a resounding level of depth in analog or, you know, traditional art that I just don't think you see that otherwise. There's a character running through that book that is my teddy from when I was five, and there's lots of things in that book that are really very, very personal to me, and a lot of things other people won't pick up and never will.
Yeah.
But that's why I think, you know, you feel the love and passion in the art because it's a lot more than just what you see on the paper.
Do you work out of like a home studio scenario? Where are you doing your work?
I work in a home studio. It's a converted garage here.
Yeah.
I have grown out of my space, and I'm looking forward to, as much as I don't want my children to leave home, there is a bigger space for me.
If you're listening.
I love you.
Packing.
I love you.
Trade Me has some great listings. Yeah. And do you have, like, when we talk to authors, often they have like a routine. They get up in the morning, they do certain things. Like, do you have a routine for when you are creating your best art, or do you have to be in the mood and let it sort of flow? Are there days that you go to that garage and go, it's not today?
If I'm completely honest, I am absolutely obsessed with art, and I am pretty much thinking about it 24/7.
Right. Sorry, kids, you're definitely moving out. Yeah. And so you just get there as soon as you can and do as much as you can.
Well, the thing is, it's not to say that I'm in my studio. I'm thinking about it. Like, a lot of the you know, a lot of the work is about processing what I'm doing and reflecting on what I've done. And working physically on a piece of, you know, canvas is only a very, very small portion of that, because there's a lot of preparation and a lot of thought that goes in behind the scenes.
Yeah.
When we go around to the schools, we often take the portfolio with all the sketches and the various faces of the Easter Bunny and the body shapes and all those things, that so the kids can see what goes into it, and it's not just putting a paintbrush on paper. It's great.
That's so cool. All right, we'll take a short music break, and then we're going to catch up on your journey, take us back to when you first started writing. Now the fabulous Kayla Mahan and Simon Thompson has come into our inbox this week. They're Southern New Zealand-based singer-songwriters and musicians who have been performing country music for over 3 decades. They've released a new track called Hell of a Crime, a story that is a smoky look between destined lovers irrevocably chained together. Together in love. There we go. There's an illustration thought coming out straight away there. Kayla wrote this energetic rocky number with Nashville pen songwriter Ryan Sorsted. Here, let's take a listen and enjoy.
Blindsided, that frustrated adrenaline rush had me fired up, and I just couldn't hide it. Had me captured in that first kiss, skipped the blue lights and kissed the red on my lips. That's one hell, hell of a crime. Stuck together, doing time, my heart was the judge and the jury. Baby, lock and key, that's love in a heartbeat. Tell the truth, did I ever say it was it all you? You stole my heart like it wasn't even mine. That's one hell, hell of a crime.
Prisoner living life like a prisoner, I kinda like this ball and chain. Eyes are straight killers. Just one look, then you took me away. Had me captured in that first kiss. Skip the blue lights and kiss the red on my lips. This one hell, hell of a crime. Stuck together, doing time. My heart was the judge and the jury. Baby, lock and key, that's love in a hurry. Tell, tell the truth. Did I have a say? I wasn't all. There's no escape. We're together.
This one hell, hell of a crime. Stuck together, doing time.
My heart was the judge and the jury. Baby, lock and key, that's love in a hurry. Tell, tell the truth. Did I have a say? We'll be right back.
Taylor Mayen and Simon Thompson. If you've got some music you'd like to send us, email us info@kickarts.org.nz. We love promoting New Zealand artists, so flick us that email. Also, if you've got something coming up anywhere in the country, make sure you're emailing us so we can get it up on our events page. Emma's got it all up to date. Go and check it out, kickarts.org.nz. Now back to our fabulous guests, author and illustrator tonight. Kirsty, take us back. When did you first start writing? When was that sort of first bug to write a book?
I think that was also a lockdown thing. So
yeah,
instead of the sourdough, we decided we'd get creative.
Yep.
My sister, though, was always writing books. She used to write books for me as a kid. So she was the one that suggested it. She was the one that said, we can't. She was living in Tauranga at the time, and she said, why don't we do something that we can do over the phone? And so we came up with the idea of writing a book. So it snowballed.
You said at the beginning, usually sort of romance, comedy type, or light romance. How would you describe your books usually?
The romantic comedies.
Romantic comedies.
But they're sort of heavier on the comedy than they are the romance.
Yeah, okay. And you're busy penning one, or one's just been released?
We're always busy writing another one. We've got 7 published now.
Wow, great.
The last one that we did was set in Stewart Island, but of course, Stewart Island's only 400 people, so we created our own island.
Yep.
So that we wouldn't get sued by anybody down there. So that one came out October of last year. And we've got one ready to go, but we're not sure when we're launching that one yet.
Great. And we're going to catch up with you and your sister in a month or so and talk about your book in a special competition coming up. I remember when you first came in here was the night we had to jump into the other studio because we were having technical faults in here. And it was the night of the band Where's Jai coming in. And you were so lovely to these young performers.
They were amazing.
Performing. And now they're in the top 10 charts. They're doing amazing music. I mean, they've just come so far. It's fantastic.
Isn't it great? New Zealand music is doing that.
Though. Yeah, absolutely. Well, all forms of art in New Zealand is thriving. We talked before you went off on air that you'd been to Melbourne recently to a book festival. What's it like sort of trying to get into those overseas markets?
I think you do it more to network. You go for the experience. And, you know, Melbourne. So,
yeah,
you can't beat Melbourne. So, mostly we go. We were lucky enough to be asked to be on some panels for this one. So, we did a couple of panels and we had a stall there. And we had a ball. It was great fun.
So, when it comes to getting your books internationally recognised, is it about having to go digital so you're hitting the Kindles of the world and all of those things? I mean, something like this so beautifully illustrated, how do you get it into that space?
I think we do e-books, but strangely enough we sell more paperbacks. But I think with the Easter one, e-books are very popular in America for us, but of course Americans don't have chocolate eggs. They do candy. So,
do they do Easter candy?
Yeah, they just they have those plastic eggs that they put candy in. They don't do chocolate.
They do.
So it's not really our market.
See, Cadbury hasn't infiltrated enough over there.
No.
Yeah. What first started, do we know what first started the chocolate eggs versus
I have read this, but I can't for the life of me remember.
I'll find out.
All right. Yeah, Google. What could possibly be wrong? I lost my total train of thought there. I got stuck on the thought of chocolate. With your books going international, do you find certain countries pick them up better than others?
Not particularly. E-books in America for us, but apart from that, it's sort of a little bit hit and miss. It really depends. Somebody picks one up and gives you a good review.
Yeah.
Reviews are big for authors.
Right.
So if you get a good review and someone else reads it, they'll pick it up. Tends to be word of mouth for us.
I love the fact, too, that you self-publish. Now, you've made that as a strong call across all your books to self-publish?
Yes.
Yeah?
We've decided that we're too old to wait around for traditional publishing.
And that seems to be the thing that we hear, eh? That, you know, there's nothing wrong with the good publishers. It's just they're not turning them out to the volume that a self-publishing can.
Yeah, it takes quite a long time to get, you know, in New Zealand you really need an agent, and then you need to get the publisher, and then you have to wait for them to market it and to put it out, and it can be years.
Right.
So for us it's we're turning out at least one book a year.
Yeah.
It's easier just to do it ourselves, really.
And what's been your biggest learning in that space?
Oh, so much. That really we probably don't know what we're doing is probably our biggest learning curve. We really are just learning as we go.
Okay, all right.
I found out where the eggs are from.
Yes.
So it started off, here we go, in the 19th century in Europe as decorated boiled eggs used in Easter, which was a symbolic of rebirth and the resurrection.
Right.
And early versions were solid chocolate or filled eggs, and then they became the hollow chocolate eggs created in 1873 first by Fry and Sons.
Wow. Solid chocolate egg. Now that would be something to be finding. Don't know that I'd be that excited about a boiled painted egg on Easter. I wouldn't be ripping into that one.
Did you not do that as kids?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I remember blowing the egg out,
and the food colouring.
And then you dip them in the food colouring and everything. That was really exciting, and especially if you could do it without cracking it.
Yeah.
And then what I loved, because we had all the insides of the eggs, Mum would do baking, or, you know, if she did it properly, she could get it and have the meringue to be able to make meringues and stuff.
Oh, okay, nice. Clever. All right, multitasking there. Multitasking. What about you, Tanya, from a book perspective, what's been your biggest learning during this journey?
I think believing in myself, having confidence in myself to do it. I think the reason I took such a long time was partly because I was a bit of a perfectionist and I was really scared of failure. I had incredible imposter syndrome just before the book came out, and almost didn't let Kirsty know this, but I almost just was like, I can't do it. But pushed myself through. So it was just believing in myself.
Can I ask what the doubt was? Because it's a beautiful book.
The doubt was I completed some courses during the process on picture book illustration, and I learned a lot of things that I've done are actually against the rules. And so I had some mentorship along the way, and that could have derailed me completely, actually.
Right.
Because it's not the norm in terms of illustration.
Yeah, yeah.
So I really, I started questioning myself at that point.
But there's something kind of nice about it feels like a collection of artworks in there, which there's something very traditional about the Easter Bunny. I don't know, it kind of goes, I think of different things I've seen the Easter Bunny illustrated over the years. It is far more traditional.
That was very much the intention.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be works of art, that framed works of art, really, within each page.
So then that blows the normal out of the wood anyway.
Absolutely, but one thing it did for me was being very new to illustrating a book, was that it just helped confine the illustrations to one page, but at the same time, the way we've done it, it's nice that the kids can actually just focus on the words on one side and not have the words caught up, and that's a very traditional way of doing it as well.
I think, though, that book has the ability for grandparents to pick it up and feel like a good old-fashioned storybook. Yeah.
Yes, my mum is in a retirement village and she's going great gun selling it down there.
Oh, good, good, yeah.
Go, mum.
Well, that's another great idea. And we have a lot of listeners in the fabulous retirement villages around the country. So there we go, grandparents, pick this book up. We'll tell you where to get it from at the end. Great Christmas gift. An Easter gift, something really different.
Yeah, I'd be quite happy, you know, because like you said earlier, some kids can't eat chocolate. So to be able to have something that is totally Easter.
Do you find the New Zealand libraries are really supportive with things like this?
Very much so. We're actually doing some library events that have been organised by some of the librarians. Libraries are fantastic in New Zealand. They're so supportive, especially of indie authors.
Yeah, great. Now, Emma, you've chucked a competition up on our socials. Tell us about it.
So we've got a lovely Easter gift basket being brought in by these two, which includes a copy of the book and some chocolate. So
hard-boiled eggs.
No, I don't think there's any hard-boiled eggs. I'm just kind of looking down there. And some cute little bunny ears as well, which is really gorgeous. So if you jump onto our socials, either Instagram or Facebook, you'll see it there. Make sure you're following or liking us. Comment that Jack is the Easter Bunny. And tag who you're going to share this gift basket with, and we will draw it live on the show on the 22nd?
Yes.
Of March.
Sounds
just in time for Easter.
Yes. And if you're tagging someone that perhaps is too young for socials, just pop their name, because they might want to tag their kid.
Mm. Yeah. Or just say that's who you're doing.
Yeah, that's really cool. Really cool. So what's next on the horizons for the rest of the year? What are we doing to get Magic Jack out there?
We're doing the Easter show, so that will be a huge one for us. We haven't done the Easter show before, so that is very exciting. And then it's cracking the whip so Tanya can get doing the art for the Christmas book.
Great. You hoping to launch that this year?
No.
Okay.
I'm not that mean. Next year.
Nice. So half a whip. Yeah, little whip.
Yeah.
Tanya's going home and straight to the garage. Kids start packing. She's coming home and she needs the room. So lovely to catch up with you both. Where can people get the book and support you? Where can people sort of follow you and find out more?
We're currently getting into a few Toy Worlds that are selling the book.
Great.
So if you go into a Toy World and it's not there, please ask them to order it. Same with Paper Plus. Otherwise, we are selling it on my website, which is www.nikkiperrykirstyroby.com. So
nikkiperrykirstyroby.com, or and hopefully track it in the library as well.
And yes, it should be in all the libraries.
Awesome. We'll look forward to catching up with you and your sister a little bit later on in the year. Go well, have a fabulous Easter, and jump onto our socials, enter the competition so you can win the fabulous little gift basket and a copy of Magic Jack.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Taking a music break now, and we're heading to our other friends of Kick Arts, Borderline. They've released another track recently called Tainted.
What a shame, you're the best. Hate to say it, I'm a little obsessed. In that dress, out of breath. Now it's gone, I feel a little bit vexed. So I park up the car and I take it too far and say, I don't love you. I wasn't asking for your love. I was wasted. Why did they have to sober up and leave us tainted? I would do whatever you wanted to. I bite the bullet and take it real far. I never thought that I'd be telling you this. Oh, I never thought that would be your last kiss. So I park up the car and I take it too far and say, I don't love you. I wasn't asking for your love. I was wasted. Why did you have to show your love and leave us tainted? What I would do for a night with you, darling. I would do whatever you wanted. What I would do for a night with you, darling. I would do whatever you wanted.
Borderline with Tainted. It's always funny, Emma, watching music videos of your past students.
Yeah, I know. And their videos are great, though.
They're great. They're doing so good. So good. Well, from one Kick Arts lovely music group to another fabulous friend of the show, good evening, Jenny Smith. How are you tonight?
Hey, Stephen. I'm good. How are you doing?
It's great. We're good, thank you. Great to have you on. And
just a pity you're not here to give me my gluten-free treats, though.
I know. I just thought that. We're doing a phone interview. We're not getting our usual baking.
I know.
Oh, damn. Damn, we didn't think this out right. Jenny, we've got you on the phone because you've had an incredible busy start to the year. You're releasing music left, right and centre. And I love it when I wake up on a Saturday morning and my Apple Music alert said you need to listen to Jenny Smith's latest track, Mirror. So you've got Apple talking for you. Well done.
Oh, that's amazing. I didn't know that was a thing.
It was. It was a great start. So tell us, what have you been doing since we caught up with you before Christmas?
Oh, wow. I had the busiest Christmas. It was just gig after gig after gig, all these Christmas shows, which is so much fun. And then I played my first New Year's Eve gig.
Yes, how did that go?
Really, really well. I loved singing into the new year, and it just felt like the best start for me musically, because this is just, it's going to be such an amazing performance year. I've already done a lot of performances. I've sung at the Waiapa Summer Sounds Festival. I've sung at the Auckland Songwriters Circle, which people should definitely get amongst. That is a great thing. Also went and performed at the Bunker on Sunday. So, yeah, it's been busy, and I love it.
And we're still making music videos.
Oh, yes.
So
I forgot about that part.
Yes.
Yeah, we made a music video.
How are you fitting all of this into, you know, because this isn't just your day job?
Well, I've made it my day job.
Oh,
now.
You have now. Fantastic.
I was juggling music teaching alongside being an artist for like 4 years, and it was a lot. And I took a really big decision last year to take a step back from teaching. So I'm only teaching one day a week now, so that I can focus on being a pop star the other 6 days.
Wow, that is so cool. And working towards an album?
Yes, so the album is done and ready to be released on March 27th, which I'm super, super excited for. And then I'm going to go on tour.
Brilliant. All around the country?
Yeah, I'm actually going to Christchurch, because the biggest complaint I had last year with my first tour was that I didn't go to the South Island.
Well, some of our biggest listenership seems to be Christchurch, so they're very supportive down that way. So
they really are.
Tell us about Mirror that we're going to play shortly.
Well, Mirror was originally a fictional song, and I wrote it because my mum is always comparing me to other brunettes, like, Jenny, you look so much like Anne Hathaway or Emma Watson or Keira Knightley, and they're very beautiful women, and I understand why she was comparing me to them, but at the same time, I was like, I don't see the resemblance. And so it kind of made me think, if people think that brunettes all look the same, what are the chances of me having an ex that moves on with someone that looks exactly like me? And it's quite likely. So, when I wrote the song, it was fictional, and then about 2 years later, it ended up happening.
Now, we talked about that in your last interview, because every video we watched, there seemed to be some, you know, this. We said we were kind of unfolding the Jenny Smith life. So, you know, where's this heading next, then, I wonder? What's the next track for release?
Oh, you might just have to wait and see about that.
Ooh, okay.
But the album's coming out, so it's just a combination of my diary in there, and I'm really looking forward to people hearing all these songs.
Fantastic. All right, we're going to play Mirror in just a second. Where can people jump online to follow you, support you, and make sure they're downloading your music?
Well, Bandcamp is the best place to purchase music. It helps artists so much. I'm sure you've talked about it before on your station. But also I'm on Instagram and TikTok and Facebook. Songsmith_Jenny is my username.
Give Bandcamp a little bit of a plug, because we haven't talked about it for a little while. Why? What makes it different from all the other streaming platforms?
Well, with Bandcamp, all of what you pay is going to the artist. And on top of that, it also helps artists get onto the New Zealand official music charts. So it's quite a big deal.
Great. That's awesome. Awesome. All right. Let's hit play and take a listen to Mirror. Jenny, we'll look forward to catching you up in person a little later on in the year with you and your baking back in the studio.
I will make sure I have some nice treats for you.
Thanks for jumping on a Sunday night. Here is Jenny Smith with Mirror.
For me, is she from the city? And you're showing her around just to rub it in. I knew you had a type, but didn't think I'd be what you mean. I bet she's into Disney, doesn't like whiskey, and she's just a little naive.
Smith, go and check her out. Videos are up on YouTube. Jenny's music videos are always worth a watch, and we love seeing these artists really transform over the years.
Oh, and it's amazing how much they change so quickly.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like only yesterday, like us talking earlier about, like, Where's Jai?
Yeah, yeah.
And Borderline, all those kids that were kids for us,
yeah,
when we
yeah.
were their teachers.
It's quite funny.
And here they are doing stuff all over the charts and that.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Brilliant. Love it. All right, we've talked magic Easter bunnies, we've talked music, and now it's time to talk theatre with the fabulous Acacia and Indigo from My Name is Rachel Corrie. Welcome to the show, team.
Kia ora. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Great to have you back on Kick Arts. It's been a while. Now, I did not know anything about this show till I did a little bit of a read-up for today, and what an interesting story. So, Indigo, you're the director. Tell us, what is My Name is Rachel Corrie all about? Tell our listeners.
So, Rachel was a real woman. She went to Gaza in 2003, and she wrote journals while she was there. She lived with Palestinian families to try and stop the demolition of homes that was going on at the time, and she was tragically martyred. And after her death, her family had just hundreds and hundreds of pages of these journals and writings and correspondence, and some British theatre makers Alan Rickman, who we all know, of course, as Snape, and Catherine Viner, who is a journalist. They collaborated with the family as well to get all the writings and form them into this beautiful solo show. So that's what we're working on now, and Acacia is playing Rachel. She's doing beautifully, and she's doing an amazing job of learning 33 pages straight text.
And where was Rachel originally born?
She's from Olympia, Washington. She's a US citizen.
Okay. Okay. What made you decide, yeah, I want to direct this one?
Well, Acacia had been kind of planning this year of Palestinian Kopapa theatre, and she sent me the script, and I sat in my bed and I read it in one sitting and I just wept. And I went and was like, I have so many ideas.
That's cool.
Like, let's do this. Her writing is so beautiful and so moving. I just think it's a really powerful piece with a lot of potential.
I love it when you read something and you can't put it down. You do it. You just know, that's the one. Okay, and Acacia, what's it like being Rachel Corrie?
Oh, gosh, it's very grounding, actually.
Yeah.
I think we're having a lot of fun, which I don't know if you would expect from a play where, you know, spoiler alert, that she dies at the end. But I also feel that a lot of the kind of questions that I've been wrestling with over the last couple of years, and a lot of the kind of fears that I haven't been able to put words to, she puts the words to.
Interesting.
Even though it's 20 years later,
yeah,
and the situation is considerably worse, I think that it's the same sort of fear. She has this amazing quote where she's writing to her mum a few days before she's killed, and she's saying, I am afraid that, isn't that hilarious? I know 33 pages of dialogue, so it's not going to come out of my mind right now.
But it's Sunday night at 9 o'clock, yeah. It's okay.
But she's saying that she's afraid for losing her own belief in the goodness of humanity. And I think there's something really deep about that. But she also talks in amazing ways about ways to combat that fear and to keep showing up anyway and be with each other. And
wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
How special for the parents, though, to have almost been gifted this writing, you know, and for it not to just be lost.
Yeah. And the other thing that is really amazing about the story is that after her death, her parents, who were like middle class, normal Americans who didn't know anything about Palestine, they started the Rachel Corrie Foundation. And they have been doing incredible work for decades now, supporting Palestinians and on this solidarity co-papa. And so, yeah, there's something really beautiful about the way that even though the end of her life was tragic and too soon, it also had these beautiful ripple effects out into the world, both with the mahi that her parents took on in her name and in her honour, and also with the play itself and all the people who have been touched by it.
Still moving people. We've been, I've been amazed by the amount of kind of ripples that are already happening in the community, in the wider community. People going, oh, you're doing Rachel Corrie.
Wow.
Thank you. Yeah, people really, really still have her in their hearts, and lots of the Palestinian community have said that she kind of feels like almost one of their ancestors or something.
There is such a strong whack papa there, though, you know, with the Free Palestine Movement here in Aotearoa. And, yes. I mean, one of the flotillas is just gone. The last few days, I think, they flew out to join the flotilla from the New Zealand movement.
Yep, our darling friend Rana Hamida, who was in she was the lead in the last show that we did. So me and Indigo and the group of people, we are Samud Ensemble all together. We put on a show called Tales of a City by the Sea, which was a love story set in 2008, Palestinian. And Rana, who hadn't really done heaps of acting before, she jumped into the lead. And now she's gone back to, and she'd just come out of Israeli prison at that point when we decided to do it, because she tried last year, and now she's gone back. She's training in Italy. They're kind of scaling up. They're going, it's about going to be about 3-4 times bigger, and they're going to try again.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah. I mean, and this might be a time to actually acknowledge the passing of Roger Fowler, who of course had his tangi last week, and all the, you know, there was such a huge talk about the flotillas and what he had done and his part in the movement. So
incredible,
a
man.
Big love and Araha out to Tawera, Maya, Honi, and oh my goodness, I've just forgotten the fourth child's name. Just, it was such a moving celebration of life for Roger during the week.
Yeah, Roger's been a huge inspiration. He, I got to be at the Tangi and I actually got to sing a song for him a week before he passed, and then I sang that again at the funeral. And the main thing that I've been taking away from that's been like sitting with me since his funeral is how we can have joy and keep showing up for the hard things. And he seemed to do that very, very well, and really built community, which is very exciting as well.
And I imagine the story is going to sort of cross many cultures, many boundaries. You think of what's happened in the world in the last 24 hours alone.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's am I right? Is it that story that people are just going to actually sit there and take what they want from it too?
Yes, I think so. And I think something I've been thinking about a lot with this story is that for a lot of New Zealanders, kind of opening their hearts directly to Palestinians feels really hard. It feels like there's so much space between us. We don't speak the same language. We don't know them. We don't know their culture. And so I think Rachel has this amazing way of being a bridge for people, where she went and she lived with Palestinians, and she talks about them and talks about being fed by them and trying to pay them for taking care of her, and them saying, no, we're not a hotel, you're our guest. And they're, you know, she's never been around such poor people before, and she's experiencing so much generosity. And so I really think, or I hope, that this play and Rachel's life and other Westerners who have taken on this mantle and said Palestinians are important, their lives matter, I really hope they can be kind of a bridge for everyday regular New Zealanders to kind of step across and have their hearts opened to the plight of what's happening there.
And for some people too, coming to a piece of theatre, I think sometimes creates a bit of safety, is how I'm going to describe it, because you're going to a play.
Yeah.
So it kind of opens the door for thinking. It opens a doorway to have a discussion that maybe is uncomfortable if it's actually part of real life. And I think that's the thing with a lot of activism and things like that. It's actually really hard for a lot of people that aren't in that world to kind of get it's not just people marching down the street. There's more to it, right?
Yeah.
But seeing a play might make people that are theatre goers that maybe don't understand have the door opened.
Absolutely. And it takes away, I think, some of the shame around not understanding, because her mum, for parts of it, doesn't understand, and Rachel has to be in relationship with that, but there's still love there. And I think there's ways in that way. And, yeah, you get to see that she's a whole person, and Palestine is a whole place. And kind of like you said about the last 24 hours, it's like the same would be true if she'd gone to Sudan, Iran, like these places that are really suffering. And I think for us to just step into knowing and being willing to breathe and hear the stories for an hour, that's really quite brave.
So take us from an artistic point of view now. What's it like directing a one-person show?
It's been so much fun.
Is your cast behaving? Are they turning up to rehearsals?
She's excellent. I highly recommend Acacia to any director. I've been just so impressed with her work ethic and her dedication. Obviously, we've worked on stuff. This is our fourth play that we've collaborated on together. So we have a really deep trust there and really solid communication, which has made it super easeful. But also we're good mates, and it's just been fun, and we both love to play, and we're both really committed to finding the moments of joy, because that's honoring Rachel too, because that's who she was too. So it's actually been just such a fun, joyful process. Well, speaking for myself.
No, it's so fun. And it's so weird. I love it, because I get to just, you know, there's a lot of lines, so I'll spend hours and hours and hours learning lines, and then I come, and sometimes I'm like, I feel like I have no offers, but I'll try something, and then it sparks another six ideas in Indigo, and I'm just very impressed. She's very clear, and she very emotionally available, cries every single time I do anything. So
every single time she does anything.
I love that.
So is that when you know that time is up, when there's no tears? Yeah. She's given all she can give.
So, Acacia, are you a... You need the movement and the kind of blocking to help you learn the lines, or are you kind of need to know the lines before? Like, what way do you work as an actor?
I've never tried to learn this many lines, and someone told me, maybe it was Tanu, maybe it was Toi Fakati, someone was like, try to be off book by first day of rehearsal. And so when you're a keen bean actor, you try it at the beginning and then you get a little bit lazier. But for this one, I was like, okay, this is so intense, I need to be as off book as possible. So I learned 11 pages, and then we worked that section, and then over the next week I learned another 11 pages, and then learned that section, and then we did that in three sections to get all of it in. Yeah.
It is a lot, and especially when you've got no one else to spark off. Yeah. Like, at least when you're in with a cast, if you're kind of going, there's a look.
Yeah.
Well, we had a guest on a couple of weeks ago who was doing a one-person show, and admittedly it was comedy, but it was around this sexual consent, so he was using comedy to have this discussion. And he said, what was your biggest challenge? He said, one night I got out there, I literally said one line and went completely blank.
Save it.
It all left. But then he said he just looked at the stage manager in the wings, who was kind of mouthing something which made no sense, but it was all he needed to go, oh, I've got this, and then delivered a whole lot of lines and came off at the end and went, really sorry, I don't know how much I cut out. And they said, you actually cut nothing. You just had a long pause, but nothing got cut. But in his head, he was left to, because there isn't, you know, you and I have done stuff together and that bounce off each other. It's like, oh my God, and you just sort of have that look in someone's eyes and you say, help, I've completely lost it.
Obviously I've done solo shows before, but it's been, and so is Indigo, and but it's ones that I've written, so I haven't been precious if I've been like, oh, I said it differently, but this is verbatim, so I'm trying to get the exact, you know, like, you want, instead of a comma or an and, you know, it wants to be
exactly
if possible.
So are you performing in the main space at Tapo or the smaller space?
We're performing in Tahu this time. Love it. I'm so stoked. I love Tapo so much. I've performed there every single year since I was born to Auckland. And so stoked to be able to be going back again. And they've been so supportive, giving us really great kind of what do you call it? Percentage things, do you know? Rather than getting us to book it in advance, we just do profit share.
Nice, that's cool. And it's so great to hear theatres can do that. Is there a part of the script that you just love getting to? The certain part that you just go, oh, just love this bit.
That makes Indigo cry the most.
There's a part that I'm very excited about.
Yeah, what's that?
It's this totally mad poem, like a really crazy poem in the middle of the climax of the show where things are ramping up. She's in Gaza, she's stuck, the checkpoints have closed, she's seeing more and more violence and scary stuff. And then we just like transition into this bizarre, wacko poem about being back in Olympia, and she's like working at a mental health center, and she takes all of her like clients out for ice cream, and then she like drives them all to Mexico. And it's like very, very strange and bizarre. And we got to rehearsing this the other day, and I was kind of like, I never know going into a scene how it's going to go. I kind of let Acacia say the words, and then, as she said, kind of spark from there and start seeing it. But she came with this like fully complete bizarre wacko bouffant comedy character and just like performed the entire thing for me in this bizarre, strange way, and I just like couldn't control myself. I was cracking up, and at the end I said, no notes.
And we're performing in our garden, and there's lots of screaming and swearing and the British accent, and it's really fun. I teach drama, and I often tell my drama kids, you have to just be willing to be an absolute fool and embarrass yourself, and then you'll be sweet. Once you've embarrassed yourself in front of everybody, you can't go wrong.
Exactly.
And quite often it's those big embarrassing offers.
Yes.
The normality that you kind of go, that's it.
Yeah.
Brilliant. All right, we'll take a music break, and then we're going to catch up on your own journey in the arts. Macy has released another track. This one is called Clementine. Let's take a listen.
Staying up late, our first date. I don't wanna wait for another day. Never really learned, I know it's gonna hurt. Driving past the signs, I keep hitting curbs, cause I can't get her out of my head. No, I can't get her out of my head. Clementine, won't you stay with me tonight? Clementine, I'll be chasing my whole life. Clementine, just for once, could you be nice? Just for once, could you be nice? Waking up late, felt the dead shake. You're leaving me behind, oh what a shame. But now I've had a taste, nothing can replace. Honey on my tongue, you're all that I want. And I can't get her out of my head. Oh no, I can't get her out of my head. Clementine, won't you stay with me tonight? Clementine, I'll be chasing my whole life. Clementine, just for once, could you be mine? Just for once, could you be mine? Just for once, could you be mine? Just for once, just for once, could you be? Just for once, could you be mine?
Macy with Clementine, interesting music video, check it out on YouTube. It was only released this week. And of course, Emma loves getting all our Kiwi music from the Spotify.
Yeah, new Hatchlings Spotify playlist is fantastic. It literally puts up music that comes out on Friday, they load it on Saturday. And so it says it came out 2 hours ago, 2 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. But their most amazing list of New Zealand music. So check it out on Spotify.
Brilliant. All right, back to our guests in the studio. So, Acacia, take us back when, you know, you said you're a drama teacher. Obviously, you're doing acting. When did it sort of first kick off for you?
Well, it all probably started, well, drama school. I went to drama school, Toi Whakaari, 2015 to 2017, and then came up to Auckland and, you know, just sort of did what we could. By the end of the first year, I was like, man, I really want to be able to give back and not get too caught up in the, well, I don't know, what was I worried about getting caught up in? Like the sort of like ego, I think, that can of just auditioning, and then found teaching and then found like creating and sort of found my flow a bit more there. I've just been like a real yes person. I've just tried everything, eh? Like I tried writing, I wrote for Shorten Street for a bit and kind of learnt the ins and outs of that sort of thing there. And now I would say things have really started getting a bit more solid sort of post-COVID. I've really been kind of diving in. Te Pou really helped me I've really enjoyed art that feels like it's kind of challenging and engaging the community and starting interesting conversations. Being at Te Pō, being thrown in the deep end, learning Te Reo Māori for kids' shows, and like being the only English speaker in the room, and just not knowing what's going on, and just having to be in the deep end there. I think that kind of led me into going, okay, I really want to be kaupapa driven. And then when things really kicked off with all this genocide, I felt really... I was like, okay, it kind of felt like there were two options in my body to kind of either like shrink and hide or like get at it, get into it and try something and maybe badly or something. And so I, with a few beautiful other collaborators, we organized the first thing we organized was a 5-night mini festival for Palestine called the Gaza Dialogues. We met Rand Hazou at a rally, and he was talking about, he gave this really amazing theatrical speech, and he was holding a teaspoon and saying like the hope of a teaspoon and how you could dig your way out of imprisonment with a teaspoon. And we were like, that guy, must know that guy. And then we did the Gaza Dialogues with him, and that was the way to like meet other artists that were also like, we want to try something, don't know what to do, but we want to try, and to meet the Palestinian community. And then from there, that same year, I did a Palestinian puppet show with Rand, and I'm doing that again, actually. We got funding to go again and figure out how to tour, so we're in rehearsals for that now too, just did that today. And then end of that year, did another festival, 3 days, and made it bigger. We ran workshops, we did more theatre readings, and had live music and food, and I was just like, it's something in here. It's something in community. Yeah, I love, I kind of had like a push-pull with teaching for a while, because my parents were musicians who would then teach, and then kind of always had this attitude in themselves that they had like failed when they were teaching or something. And I think I kind of put that on myself at first, and then I realized after a while that every time I come out of a class, I have so much more energy than I had when I went in. And watching people get more confident in themselves and connect and is just such a joy. So I don't think of it as any kind of failure. I'm like, no, that's their thing. I love teaching. I love facilitating. And then I got to direct. The first thing I got to direct was for Auckland Theatre Company, for their youth company. I did The Trials, which was by Dawn King, and really political and gorgeous, and an ensemble of 12 messy young people on stage. And that was, I got to do that alongside Matthew Kereama, who comes from opera world, and I think seeing him like really enjoy the transitions and the lights, and it was just from there I was like, I want to do more of that. And then after that, like little bits more directing with the teaching and stuff, but Indy asked me to direct her solo. She made an amazing, wonderful solo last year called Pussy Play, and it was, I really love the kind of like, it's just very, I don't know, sexy and weird and real and messing with people's expectations, and and then last year, sort of all of this kind of, all of the things that I've been interested in around community, love acting and love kind of bringing people into spaces where they can step up, directing Tales of a City by the Sea feels like it was kind of the biggest challenge that I have tried to, biggest mountain I've tried to climb so far, and with the help of like 40 amazing people who just all gave their time for free. That was Rand again, that was David Lawrence, that was Indigo, that was some incredible people over at Corbin's, Eloise and Montagna, Rana Hamida, so many people. That was amazing. It really kind of exceeded my expectations. And so now I'm just like, right, let's keep going. We are some more ensemble. We are going to just keep making work and keep trying to build community. And it can be Palestine and beyond as well. We're quite tikanga Māori based in how we function. And I think some of our stories can be more Māori stories, or they can be from different parts of the world, in that samud, in that kind of essence of samud, which is like thinking of growing your roots into the ground and that resilience. I'm here and you can't erase me, is sort of the energy of that, and giving other people space to to keep trying to do that. Yeah.
I wish we had a camera in the room to see your passion so our listeners could
see. Oh,
I'm sure they could. Oh, you're live on your Instagram. Great. But just that passion just oozes out of you. Yeah, fantastic. Mm. What a journey. And you're still teaching drama?
I still teach drama, yeah. Yep. So I teach at Point Chef Drama Club. Love them. And I'm covering some of my friends' classes at TAPAC. There's a group of awesome adults there that are beginners that I love teaching. And Samud Ensemble's going to start teaching workshops and running classes kind of regularly soon, which I'm very excited about, and probably working toward like more community shows with them. So like classes that lead towards putting on shows. I love the intergenerational thing that you can do with community shows like that. It's really cool.
Brilliant. All right, Indigo, you got to top that one. My goodness, take us back. When did it first the arts world kick off for you?
As far back as I can really remember, acting was what I wanted to do. In retrospect, I'm like, oh, an undiagnosed autistic girl wants to understand human emotions and make the right facial expressions.
I love that.
Love it.
What a cool way to describe it.
But yeah, it was all I ever really wanted to do. I got an agent when I was like 11 and just did as many shows as I can with different youth theatres, ATC, and then Company of Giants as well. And then I went and studied in New York in 2015, 2016. I trained to be an actor. And then in 2022, I went and did my master's in script writing, at Vic under the wonderful Ken Duncombe, who we love so much. And yeah, for me, it's always been about kaupapa, I think, but it's just become so much clearer what is needed, what that looks like, and how to kind of bring that to people in the last couple of years. And Acacia mentioned Pussy Play, which was the solo show that we made last year that I performed with Tom Dennison, who made music for it. And it was just a real process of me being like, okay, ancestors, like, what do you want me to say to these people? If I can get some people into a dark room for an hour, mm-hmm. what do I need to say to them? Mm. What do I need to do in front of them? How do we move them? And becoming really clear on, I believe that healing is possible. I really believe that we can look at all the brokenness in the world right now and we can grieve it, but we can also be like, cool, let's do better. Let's mm-hmm. build something new. And so kind of giving people that hope is a big part of what I'm trying to do when I'm trying to get people in a dark room. is make them believe that they could leave the room different and they might feel different, but they also might be able to act differently. They might be able to be a little bit more courageous. They might be able to take a braver action than they could when they came in. And that's why I feel so passionately about this play, is that Rachel makes me want to be braver. She makes me want to go and join the solidarity movement and go to the West Bank and live with Palestinians. And seeing people who have done that makes everyone feel a bit more courageous. And there's this line, Acacia probably can remember it better than I can, but it's when she's still home in Washington and she's kind of exploring the land and understanding her own connection with the salmon and with the people who lived there before, as she calls them. And she says something about knowing that we walked the same beaches as some very brave people makes bravery feel more possible. Is that right?
Pretty
Something
much.
Like that. And I feel the same, knowing that we're saying the same words that Rachel wrote. It makes her level of bravery feel more possible. And so I just want to bring that to people and show them, like, hey, that's possible.
Mm. With your background in acting, directing and script writing, is there a certain place you feel most at home, or do you like the variety?
I want to collapse the hierarchy between these things is actually what I feel at my core is like. I want to tell stories, and I think those roles and that hierarchy can be useful in really big projects, especially when there's a lot of people to manage. But I also think it can hold us back from being truly collaborative and truly present sometimes if we're like, well, that's just not my role. So I think one of the really joyful things about collaborating with Acacia and with Sumur Ensemble and the larger Ropu has been kind of just taking that a little bit more playfully and being like, cool, how much hierarchy do we need to make this work? And particularly with Tales, it needed me to bring out my stage manager voice sometimes and tell everyone when they need to be on stage, because we had 20 actors and some of them were not actors. They were lots of community members. So, you know, you need a certain level of, but also just like kind of holding that lightly and gently and being playful with it and being like, in what ways do hierarchies stop us from being creative or stop us from being able to collaborate? Because really at the core of what I'm trying to do is dismantle oppressive hierarchy and retain useful structure, but remove anything that is at its core kind of patriarchal and colonial and oppressive.
So true, though.
No,
so true. And the thing is, though, with a one-person show, you need it. Acacia, you need an outside eye who can kind of go, yes, and a little bit more here and a little bit, you know, because as an actor on a stage, we think we're often, we think we're doing something, right? But then we kind of go, ah, I thought I was doing that.
Absolutely. And Tales of a City taught me that I, that 18 people needed one person to be the final decision maker and hold it quite clearly and not be too, in the last phases in particular, they need to know that someone has the vision because it's quite scary otherwise. And so it's a little bit of that, like, can we be all, can we all be actors a bit more, and can we step into our role and be like, right, I'm the boss for the day and now I'll take that role off and here we are again. And now you do that and you,
very cool.
We kind of touched on it at the start of the interview, but you know, if we put the Kick Arts microphone in the foyer of Te Pō or in the Fabulous Bar, what do you hope people will be talking about after the show? What's the conversations you want to spark?
Or are they not having a conversation?
They could be leaving quiet and just need to get home and think. I love those shows.
Yeah, I'd like for them to have conversations. The conversation will be really different with lots of people. I would love, because our Palestinian community will be there, and I would love to for people to maybe feel a bit brave to start a conversation with someone from another culture that maybe they haven't yet. My beautiful friend Minas will be coming along on opening night and providing food, but she's still got family in Gaza, and it's really hard and scary, and so she's raising funds for them all the time as much as she can. And I hope that people might feel a little bit less afraid, like, you know, that there's not this kind of wall of unknown around her that they can't reach through. That it's like, hi, I see you, there you are. That would be one cool thing. Do you have any things you hope people say?
The play actually ends with a recording of Rachel when she was 10. And she's like at some, I don't know what it's from, she's at some event and she's like talking about how she wants peace and how she wants to eradicate hunger and how she wants to stop all the children globally from dying of hunger. And I really want people to feel that they remember what it's like to be 10 years old and believe that that's possible again. I really want people to connect with that childlike hope and wonder and love for others that I think is actually just like the most natural part of all of us, and we build all these walls around it to keep us safe and to keep us functioning within capitalism. But I want people to be brought back to that part inside their hearts that's still there, that maybe they don't listen to very often because it's too painful, but to have had this moment of safety in this dark room with these strangers who are all feeling it, come back to that child and want to take one small action to make that child proud. That's what I would love.
Beautiful. What a great place to end it, isn't it?
So beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, Emma, we're going to have a very busy March because I think we have to add this to our schedule.
I think we do.
I think we do.
We'd love that.
Tell us, where can people get tickets and support you and follow along?
So you can get tickets on Te Pō's website, Te Pō Theatre, and then it'll say what's on, and we're pretty near the top because it's quite soon now. And you can also find us on Instagram. My name is Rachel Corey _ Tamaki, or you can follow Sumud Ensemble as well. So that's Sumud, Sumud _ Ensemble, and you'll get all the info there.
Brilliant.
And of course, it's on Kickart's event page as well.
Woo-hoo,
so jump on there and you'll find the booking link.
Book along the 19th to the 22nd of March. Thank you so much for sharing tonight, especially after a busy day of other rehearsals. We appreciate it, and we'll look forward to catching you at the show.
Thank you
so much.
Emma, a busy week ahead for you?
It feels like it should be a busy week. I think it's just that same old, you know. The Boosted starts tonight for Bad Jelly the Witch at the Pump House in the school holidays. It's Stage Antics' first step into professional paid theatre with six young, talented, next-gen actors who are all getting paid, doing a New Zealand adaptation of Bad Jelly the Witch. So check us out on Boosted. We would love some support there. And other than that, it's just rehearsals, Hadestown, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think I'm seeing any shows this week, but who knows? I kind of need to open my diary to know what I'm doing. It's day by day.
Well, I've got an exciting day Tuesday. I'm taking Elias, who was one of the original plane members in 9/11 who landed in Newfoundland that created the stage show Come From Away, with his many words in the show. Get to take him from Auckland down to Tauranga to Come From Away rehearsals so that the cast can interview and talk to the person who was on the plane. Yeah. So I'm really excited to be part of that story and sharing.
Maybe we should share the link back to when he was on Kickarts all those years ago to hear him talk about his experiences of 9/11.
Absolutely. Tickets on sale now for that for Tauranga Music Theatre. We are closing the show with a song called Rock Bottom. It's by Harry Kirby, who has been hitting us up constantly on Instagram to play his music. So here it goes. Have a fabulous week, everyone, and make sure you
kick some arts.
In the night I can hear you calling. Say it ain't so, say it ain't so. Tonight I feel rock bottom. It's hard letting you go, letting you go. You said that it's over, but I can't lie. Every day you replay in my mind. It's like I'm stuck, I'm frozen in time. It's hard to say, but any day I will die. And all I ever did was try. All these fights going out, so I can get you out my mind. Now these days are over, life keeps moving slower. Get wiser as I'm older. I'll never look back, and I'll never look back. Yeah, in the night I can hear you calling. Say it ain't so, say it ain't so. Tonight I feel rock bottom. It's hard letting you go, letting you go. In the night I can hear you calling. Say it ain't so, say it ain't so. Tonight I feel rock bottom. It's hard letting you go, letting you go. Time flies when you have good memories. I'm on the side where you're my centerpiece. In my head like a constant melody. Time after time, I used to sit and remind myself that everything's fine until it's us that's divided. Night after night, I wanna sit back and find a bit of closure. Now these days are over, life keeps moving slower. Get wiser as I'm older. I'll never look back again, I'll never look back again. In the night, I can hear you calling. Say it ain't so. Tonight I feel rock bottom. It's hard letting you go, letting you go. In the night I can hear you calling. Say it ain't so, say it ain't so. Tonight I feel rock bottom. It's hard letting you go, letting you go.
teeth and don't forget to go to sleep. We'll be going live, same time under the stars, saying blah, 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 blah. Let's go kick some art, art, art. Go kick some art.